Okay, let's move on to the debate at the, that we are hearing to this evening is the issue that 40% of voters say is their top issue, the healthcare system. And in theory, we should have very little debate, of course, because we now have an all-party, all-agreed plan, Sláintecare. And in case anyone's been living under a stone, just to explain in very simple terms, this is the single long-term vision for health and social care. It's essentially about creating a single-tier health system which would offer equal access to healthcare free at the point of delivery. And it's estimated to cost $10.9 billion over its 10-year implementation. So this was accepted by you, Simon Harris, as Minister in May 2017. So tell me now, how much did you commit for its implementation in 2017?
In 2017, it was a very small amount of money. We started committing larger sums of money from 2018.
How much in 2018?
Where the government set aside €220 million over 4 years to do a deal with our GPs. And also in 2019, a further €20 million for an integration fund to pilot projects across the country. And of course, there is another big element when it comes to Sláintecare, Katie, though, which is also the capital. Because when you're reading the Sláintecare document, it talks about 2,600 more beds. It talks about 4,000 more beds in the community. And whilst our health service has been relatively well funded in terms of current spending, it hasn't in relation to capital. So we now have $10.9 billion for capital spending, much of which is delivering.
Okay, just in relation to the amount put aside, as you say, in 2018 and 2019. In 2018, but at the time, back in 2018, we were talking about a $3 billion transitional fund, which would be set up in October's budget of 2018. And this would help to set the ball rolling.
And that wasn't practical because, Katie, as your listeners will know, and we've got to be honest with people here, Oireachtas committees can produce reports. If the amount they look for in one budget is larger than the entire amount of money available to any government in 1 year in additional spending, that's not going to be achieved in a year. The benefit of Sláintecare is that it is a 10-year plan. We had a significant amount of work to do to get an implementation plan in place and to sequence this correctly. So just one example I'd give you. Sláintecare says make free GP care available to every citizen in our country within 5 years. If you did it like that, you would overwhelm general practice. So we had to actually look at how you phase these things.
Simon Harris, I am old enough to remember the 2016 general election manifesto when Fine Gael committed to having free GP care for everyone under 18.
Correct.
By 2019.
Correct. And if we were here and had done that now, you'd be saying, and Minister, why haven't you sat down and listened to the GPs? So we sat down and listened to the GPs and we've worked out a more sensible way to actually sequence it.
And are the GPs fully behind your current proposal to give free...
Different GPs believe different things. If you read Dr. Mark Murphy in the Irish Times only about 2 weeks ago, saying he's very much in favour of it.
I read that huge reaction from GPs up and down the country to that piece.
Well,
Mark Murphy, maybe softening his position on that after that.
GPs, just like politicians, just like journalists and broadcasters, have different views in relation to this. Okay. It's our job to set policy. But when we talk about free GP care, just to be clear, it's not free. We're paying for it. We, the taxpayer, are paying for it. Instead of asking the parents to put their hand in their pocket and find the 60 or 70 euro, we're paying the GP, we, the taxpayer. We believe, if you believe in universal healthcare, your general tax should cover the cost of accessing healthcare. And we do know that cost is a barrier for hardworking families to access healthcare, particularly for their children.
But the lack of GPs is a bigger cost, surely. I'll put that to Louise O'Reilly, actually.
We've actions on that as well, though, and it's important to say.
Okay, well, Louise O'Reilly, because you do believe that there should be, I think, in the area of pre-budget submission, it was 2 free GP visits for everyone in the country.
So everyone on this panel, the politicians on this panel anyway, and all of the politicians in the Dáil, signed up to Sláintecare. What we need to discuss now is how to phase it. So I was acutely conscious, as indeed was my party, of the need not to overwhelm GPs. So we know that 65% of GP practices are now closed to additional patients. So we know that there are 700 GPs going to retire in the next 7 years. So simply making an announcement and hoping that they will jump up and be able to do it, that's not right. So what we tried to do was take a sensible approach in terms of phasing. So it's not simply a case of saying we want to start the phasing. We also want to start training more GPs and encouraging GPs to come back and providing them supports within primary care so that they can build their practice and the primary care can become the centre of local health care.
But explain to me why the idea of two free GP visits for everyone in the country, be they healthy, be they sick, be they on a lower income, be they on the kind of income that will be hit by a wealth tax by Sinn Féin. Why should a family like that get free GP care?
Well, everybody is committed to universal mm-hmm. access. The question is phasing. So if you, I mean, and I know you understand what universal access means. That means everybody has access without charge. So the cost is not a barrier. But certainly in my offices in Swords and Balbriggan, and also when I'm out on doors talking to people, I know that there are families out there where the parents don't go to the doctor because they don't have the money.
So why not target those families rather than starting off with a universal proposal?
Because we are all committed to universality. It's a question of phasing. So that's why. So the argument has been won in terms of universal access. The argument was won in the Dáil. The belief within the Dáil, and it's in Sláintecare, that universal access is the way to go. But what we want to do, I mean, it's not true to say that healthy people will go to the doctor. I doubt if they will. But what we want to do is ensure that those people who don't have that money don't miss a doctor's appointment when they need to go to the doctor. So it's about phasing. It's about where you start. So what we tried to start it with, instead of making a big announcement, was to ensure that not just were we going to start the phasing and do it in a measured way, but also train GPs and provide those supports and provide them with the staff that they need in primary care
centres. I want to just put Susan Mitchell. How is this playing with GPs?
In the main, badly, from the GPs who I talked to, and I'm talking about expanding, like a rapid expansion, which is what GPs fear. Mm-hmm. There are obviously, as the Minister correctly says, some GPs who think it's the right way to go, but GPs feel overwhelmed at the moment with the amount of work they have already. Many people in the country can't actually access a GP or sign up to a new GP practice if they, move location or happen to be among the few who find a house to live in, etc., as we were discussing earlier on. So there are huge concerns amongst GPs about their ability to actually cope with what they believe will be an additional workload, because we have seen from the under sixes that there has been increased. People do tend to use a service more when it's free at the point of access.
Or we saw the extraordinary figures, 450,000 extra visits since that free under six.
The under sixes. And that is also the experience. I've also interviewed the head of the equivalent of the Irish Medical Organisation in the UK or up in the north of Ireland, who said that they do get a lot of visits from people who ordinarily would have, whose parents in particular might have practiced a bit of self-care in the past. So there are concerns out there. But as Louise said, it is all of the political parties have signed up to an expansion and to free GP care at the point of access.
Yeah, Katie, I think how we expand it is very important. So certainly the GPs at Wicklow, I met with a room of them recently. They're not frustrated about expansion of care. Obviously, they want to provide care to their communities. They're frustrated that the capacity wasn't put in place for them to deal with the extra people coming in. What we're seeing now in Wicklow is waiting lists of up to, say, 3 weeks, which hasn't happened before. I'm out with a group of elderly people in Wicklow town recently who were really worried about this. One of them said, look, if I have a respiratory issue, normally I get to my GP the same day. Now he's saying, look, it could be 3 weeks. And the problem is, in those 3 weeks, she could get worse and worse and actually end up in St. Vincent's in A&E. So what we want to do, what Fianna Fáil is proposing, is our way of phasing Sláintecare, because I agree with Simon and Louise, we're signed up to Sláintecare, and the party manifestos are about, look, Sláintecare is a 10-year strategy. Now, it's about 2 years behind. Mm-hmm. In the first 5 years, which is the Dáil term, what would you do? So what Fianna Fáil is proposing to do is a new GP contract, a comprehensive one, not just sticking bits onto it, mm-hmm. A comprehensive one. We've allocated about 300 million for that. And what we want to do on further expansion of free care is target it where it's needed. So chronic illness, income, terminal disease, and so forth. So we want to target.
So you wouldn't start
capacity
with this universal care model in terms of access to GP care, would you?
Well, it's about making it affordable. So for any single GP card, the question is: do you give it to someone who needs it, or do you give it to someone who
are you going to give it to? That's what I'm trying to establish.
Yeah, so based on need, exactly.
You're not going to give it to.
Because I understood that you were on board with the free to the under 13s that's currently
13s.
Being.
Yeah.
You stop there. You're not going to go on to the next phase, which is going to be all children under the age of 18.
We've got to phase it, right? So there's a limited amount of money. So what you've got to do is say, who needs this most? There's a certain number of medical cards. Who needs it most? Over time,
Katie. Okay. No, I'm not.
Over time, yes. But where do you start?
What
you
you're So the universality that we've been discussing here in terms of this, where we're all on board for, you're saying not yet.
What we're saying is yes, and start by targeting it where the need is greatest.
Not yet.
No.
Well, it's not universal if you're targeting to where the need is greatest.
Okay, well, in that sense, yes, target where the need is greatest.
Okay, no, I want to move on, Minister, because before we leave the GP thing, yeah, there is one thing I do want to ask you. You mentioned there the 200 and whatever million that was set aside for the GP contract. Where is that GP contract?
Well, sorry, so firstly, we need to be clear. We reached a new agreement with GPs last year. It was worth €210 million. That does two things. It reverses the cuts that they experienced during the recessionary years. That's €130 million of it. Mm-hmm. And it also funds them an extra €80 million to provide chronic disease management care for people with asthma, diabetes, lung conditions in the community. It provides them with more maternity leave, paternity leave, extra funding. To
there is no new GP contract agreed yet, though.
No, but this is an addendum to the contract. But let's just be clear, because GPs...
Where's the contract?
We're going to now sit down with them this year and negotiate a new contract. And that's a clear commitment that we reached with the IMO last year. But I need GPs to know this, because the sequencing is important. We don't want to just sit down with GPs and talk about free GP care. We want to also look at how we can support them, particularly increasing the fees that they get paid for out-of-hours.
I see GPs constantly online, everywhere, coming out and saying they cannot stand the minister saying he wants to sit down with us. They've had an open door for I don't know how long.
Sorry, Katie.
This is why I'm just repeating what I see.
Hang on, well, let's just, because it's important that we're factually correct here. 95% of GPs in Ireland voted in favour of the deal that I reached with the IMO that reverses all of the recessionary cuts and increases payments to GPs by €210 million.
Susan, you want to
We're hardly going to vote against. Exactly. A reversal of cuts.
But you can hardly say we didn't engage when we reached an agreement.
Yeah, but it's not a renegotiation of the contract, and that was what was required.
I think that's absolutely there has been some tinkering or add-ons to the existing contract, but there hasn't been a renegotiation of the very basic
entirely true. I agree with you. That's a statement of fact.
Yeah, why hasn't there been?
Because it's been talked about for a long time and it hasn't been done.
Because when I sat down with the IMO, the first order of business was to stabilise general practice, to reverse the cuts that were imposed because of the crash in the country, and to look at things like maternity leave, paternity leave and extra supports for rural Ireland. We're now increasing the number of GPs we're training. We were training 120 a year. It's 193 this year and 270 from next year.
There's a lot of blinking and shaking of head going on. Are you honestly suggesting
that when you sat down with the IMO, they said, no, we don't want to renegotiate the GP contract?
You weren't there and I was. So when I sat down with the IMO...
I'm asking you if that's what you're suggesting.
Yes, when I sat down...
The IMO passed up the opportunity to renegotiate the GP contract.
The first order of business was reversing the cuts brought in during recessionary years and providing more supports. We reached a really good agreement on that. And what I want GPs to know and parents is we're going to phase GP care in an appropriate way, doing under eights by this September and building on that over the lifetime of the next government.
I want to move on to another, the main thrust of Sláinte Care, I suppose, which is taking public care out of private care out of the public health system. And I want, just before we go down, Stephen, I want to put this to you because you were talking about this at the Health Committee last October. So let's just hear a clip, if we can, of Stephen from that committee.
75% of the beds in public hospitals have people in them who've come through the emergency department. 75% Now, I think most people probably intuitively think that the number is much smaller. So in reality, if you're running a hospital, and tomorrow we said, don't mind the consultant contracts, we just said, in principle, we are removing, it is no longer allowed to have public private care in public hospitals. In reality, one bed in 50 might get freed up, but we wouldn't have the money to pay for that bed or the doctors or nurses. And we would have significantly less money available to treat the patients in the other 49 beds.
Now, not exactly a ringing endorsement for the central thrust of what I understood you were completely on board with, which is Sláinte Care, surely.
Well, it comes back to sequencing. It comes back to how do we do these things. It's a bit like the GPs. Do you stand up and say, this is free, everyone has free access, and she will get back to you, and the GPs are overwhelmed. If you were to tomorrow pull all of the private practice out, exactly those figures is what would happen. About one extra bed in 100 would free up, but you'd lose a huge amount of revenue coming in. So I can't remember the exact figures behind that, Katie, because I haven't heard the clip in a while, but essentially 75 out of every 100 beds in a hospital are from emergency department. I think about one in five, I can't remember the exact figure, but about one in five of them are using private insurance. Now, if they weren't using private insurance, obviously they're coming through an emergency department, so they're still coming in. So the point I was making was, okay, look, we are all signed up to taking private care out. Okay, that is unambiguous. That's what needs to happen. But we have to do it in a way that doesn't overwhelm the system.
Okay.
And the point I was making there, Katie, was, and if we were to do it tomorrow, what would happen is you'd free up one bed in 100 and you'd lose about the revenue for about 20 beds. Obviously, therefore, it has to be phased. We have to do it very, very carefully. But make no mistake, what we want is a single tier public system with only public consultants treating public patients.
Okay. Steve, can I ask a quick question? Because I was at the health briefing yesterday with Fianna Fáil. If Fianna Fáil were to get into government, could you put a year on when that would happen?
I don't think anyone could. So we have the de Butler report. So what you've got to do is you've got to phase it out. Now, if I remember from committee, what Donal was saying at committee was he thinks that over about a 10-year period that the people coming into emergency departments would stop declaring on their insurance anyway. And so that seems
it's just
like
that
a reasonable amount of time.
Yesterday it took you quite a while at the briefing to eventually said that yes, private care should be taken out of, but it was around and about the houses, and even the clip earlier.
I understand, and there's no reluctance whatsoever. So here I am, I'm Fianna Fáil's health spokesperson. Unambiguously, there is zero reluctance.
But I mean, can you appreciate an utter lack of a timeline makes it sort of.
I have a timeline.
Well, I heard you, Minister, say this week that if you are Minister by next summer...
Correct. This summer, June 2020.
By this summer...
June 2020, there'll
that
be no
you will,
issued that
there will be no more...
Only. Correct.
Sorry, say it, I'm saying it.
Sorry, no, sorry, and you're probably saying it better than I am. But by June 2020, if I'm the Minister for Health and if Fine Gael are back in government, there will be public-only contracts issued. Now, just to be clear, what does this mean to people sitting at home?
But can existing consultants still do private
care? They can.
So there still would be private care.
Absolutely, and I'm not...
So, Alison, I think that's exactly the point.
Can I just explain?
Simon, I'm not disagreeing with you.
Sure,
I'm not disagreeing with you.
But just I need to give
Alison,
space to explain.
Alison,
but could
this was
have
exactly
unintended
it, that the
consequences?
New contracts wouldn't be able to treat private people.
If I got
the existing contracts
there, I could just outline my position rather than it being outlined for me. From June 2020, we want to begin the process of hiring 1,000 additional consultants. We want to pay them more than $250,000 because, God, we need to pay them a lot more to keep them in this country. The quid pro quo is public-only contracts. And that's really important. Private medicine will continue, I'm sure. There'll be private hospitals, people with private health insurance. But the public beds in the public hospital, if you believe in universal healthcare, if it's not just wiffle-waffle that you say at an election, if you believe in it, you need to take private practice out of public hospitals. So from June 2020, that's my commitment to the Irish people.
Okay, now, Susan.
Can I just say, it's interesting because everyone is talking about the sequencing of when this should happen. In the Sláinte Care Plan, which was published back in 2017, it recommended that this start in year two. We're now into year three, so it hasn't even started. And whilst I accept what the minister is saying there about introducing these new contracts, that will take a long, long time to feed through into the system. But what Stephen said there about the extent to which this will actually free up capacity is something that the IHCA or the Irish Hospital Consultants Association has also said. Now, their critics would say, well,
You guys would say that because
you're the people who
are neutral in the debate.
Who are perhaps, you know, many of your members are benefiting from the private payments that some of these patients or their health insurers are making. But my final point on it is, for doctors, the minister mentioned the €250,000 salary, which is a huge salary and a hell of a lot more than any of us sitting at this table are on. But actually, for people, for example, cardiologists, obstetricians, people in procedure-based specialties, I'm not sure that salary will necessarily cut it because some of them are earning a lot more than that in the private system.
It would be the highest in the European Union, though.
But other countries
have managed to do this.
But there's
a very important point. I've heard that point made before. The market for our consultants and our doctors and consultants and indeed our nurses is not the European Union. It's Anglophone countries, Canada, Australia.
It'll actually be the largest in the OECD. I've also talked to consultants. I've talked to a consultant in Perth who contacted me after this, who said they'd come back from relation to this salary. The point Stephen makes is a valid one. We're not proposing here to buy out a doctor's right to have private practice. So it's the people who have the contracts. They can continue if they don't want to switch. But we're saying if you're serious about it.
So in honor. honesty, no, it's decades.
It's about, like, if we want a 10-year plan, Alison, it's going to take about 10 years, like, to deliver
No, but those, plan. But I mean, and there are not, people in the system now with those contracts.
Correct.
And they could be continue. Working for another 30 years.
But why would
I do,
we?
I do think that's, why would, I do why think would that's
we
a very...
Continue, why would we continue, though, to embed private practice? Today, we're issuing new
oh,
contracts.
Oh, no, no, I mean, okay, I think okay, the it point of trying something new, but I think you have to be honest.
Okay, I'm going to stop everyone talking over each other for a moment, and I'm going to go to a break. And before I go, just give you a flavour of what we're getting in here on our text. Sláinte Care is a utopian pipe dream. Any party that claims they are able to implement it or promising something they can't deliver.
That's all of us.
Free GP care. How about a proposal of €5 per GP visit instead of free? People will think twice, even with a small cost. Look at the plastic bag levy, a good example of little cost having a big social behaviour impact. And I've one more there. I'm a GP in Donegal with a 24-hour day, 365 days a year contract. Simon Harris and his party took 40% off general practice and has now restored 20%. His present funding restoration, when finished, will only bring funding back to the 2008 level of funding. He and his party have almost destroyed what was once a profession to be proud of. Practices are closing, new GPs emigrating, massive numbers retiring. Sláinte Care will never happen. And there's a theme going through a lot of
a lot
the
of
reaction we're getting is
too,
a lot of people really having very little confidence that this great plan
yeah, of but we must have hope. We're all of a vested interest in hoping.
Okay, I'm going to have to take a break, but stay with us. We have more to talk about after these.
Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. I want to move on to the politics of health now and the difficulties that when you know, at the nexus of politics and health. We know that the current CEO, Paul Reid of the HSE, we know the former CEO, Tony O'Brien, have both said that we have too many emergency departments in the country. What politician is going to name which of the 9 emergency departments in Dublin we can do without? Louise.
OK, so I'll if you hop the ball now, I'll take that. I think the idea of closing down when we have a capacity crisis and an access crisis, the idea of closing any door that is open to patients, I think will cause absolute alarm and panic, and for very good reasons, you know, because people come into, because there is an access and a capacity crisis within our health service. It didn't happen for nothing. It didn't happen overnight. And we'd all know exactly where it came from. So if you look at the lessons that were learned down in Limerick, and they closed the 3 A&Es that were close to Limerick, and the staff in University Hospital Limerick were told that they would get enhanced services, that it would become a centre of excellence, that there would be additional beds, that there would be loads of supports, that there would be 24/7 ambulances, and none of that happened. So down in Limerick, we see every single day of the week the impact of those closures because they were closed without putting the necessary capacity in place. That was an absolute mistake.
But just because it was done wrong, that just because that capacity wasn't put in place, doesn't mean the right answer was to keep all those other departments open.
The right answer,
surely the right answer was to
right
do
answer,
it as
no,
was
no,
promised.
No, the right answer was for the government of the day to do what they said they were
exactly.
going to do, to put the capacity in place and to have a phased and managed plan. At the moment, in the middle of a capacity crisis, in the middle of an access crisis, and you would, I don't think any politician would suggest closing the door when the door
I don't think any, but what I'm but suggesting is no politician would ever suggest
when
closing
the,
any door in any
door,
circumstances when
the door
when it comes
of
to
accident
health.
And emergency well, we is very, very yeah. often the only door that people can access the health service through. Now, that is wrong. If other doors are opening up, that's different. But at the moment, when we have a capacity crisis and when we have an access crisis, I don't think anyone is going to consider that, because very often A&E is the only door that is open to people. And that is wrong. That's why we need to turn the focus onto primary care and putting into the community, not just primary care centres, not just buildings, GPs, okay. staff and diagnostic equipment.
So Katie, for me, your question goes right to the nexus of what is being offered by the different parties in this election, because there's an awful lot of talk, quite rightly, about Sláinte Care, and everybody has signed up to Sláinte Care, and everyone is saying, here's how we do it, here's how Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin would do it. At the same time, a point of difference, I believe, for Fianna Fáil's policy is we're saying yes to Sláinte Care. However, we are in the middle of a full-blown healthcare emergency. We talked about access. 40% of voters are saying it's what they're going to vote on. Like, that's because people are scared of getting sick. I was canvassing in Wicklow tonight, and door after door, people were saying, I'm terrified of getting sick. So what we want to do at the same time as implementing Sláintecare, remember it's a 10-year plan, 2 years late already, good change, but change takes time, is bring in a suite of measures right away to say people who are sick can get access.
So this is the 200 million a year for the National Treatment Purchase Fund.
So it's several things. So it's scaling up the National Treatment Purchase Fund to 200 million and putting in a guarantee of no one waiting for surgery for more than 6 months. It's immediately dealing
with...
Does that
go against completely the thrust of Sláintecare?
No, it's in
Sláintecare. And if you put 200 million in every year, that's a billion that won't go into the public service, that will go into private, care.
It's in Sláintecare. So here's page 83 of Sláintecare. Sláintecare and waiting times. International experience is definitive that without enforced waiting time guarantees, we're saying 6 months, waiting lists and waiting times will not come down. Guarantees are made effective by either penalising hospitals or, in bold, by offering patients choices for care outside of the public system. So actually what we're doing is exactly in line with what is in Sláintecare. So scale up the NTPF to 200 million. Immediately deal with new entrant pay inequality. 50 million for diagnostics because the emergency departments, their diagnostics suites are closing down at 5 o'clock on a Friday. Remove the hiring embargo. So essentially, we've got to do two things at the same time. Be deadly serious about Sláintecare and universal care, but at the same time, deal with the emergency that's happening right now for patients.
Yeah, Susan, can I just come back on the emergency department question that you mentioned earlier? Louise made a very valid point. Where it's happened before, it's been done badly, with the exception perhaps of Roscommon, which is now a busier hospital than it ever was, albeit the local population do have concerns around ambulance wait times, etc. But the hospital, they felt, was going to get virtually no patients. That has not happened there. But if you have the current Director General of the HSE, the former Director General of the HSE, the Irish Association of Emergency Medicine, which represents doctors working on the front line in these departments, saying we cannot sustain this number of emergency departments for a country of this size. And specifically, all of them have mentioned Dublin as a problem zone, not so much rural areas, which are often the ones that are, or outside Dublin, I should say, often the areas that have been targeted in the past. We have to pay attention. And many of these smaller hospitals do not have emergency consultants in emergency medicine working around the clock.
But Susan, you mentioned Roscommon there. And you said that, you know, there is good outcomes there for the kind of day cases and that hospital is now doing. But you only have to talk to Frank Feehan, who lost his seat there because he supported the closure of that hospital at that time.
He supported the emergency department. Yeah, there's huge repercussions for politicians who do this. And I think part of the difficulty is that the health service continuously struggles, and indeed doctors who are saying that this is what needs to happen, to actually explain to the general public why this is the right decision.
There was also a promise given that election. So, it wasn't as clear cut as that. You know, I think that people were very annoyed at what they saw as being sort of.
And of course, his fellow Fine Gael left the party on the basis of it. So that wasn't helpful to his political prospects either. In relation to the private care, can you settle a question for me, Minister? Did I hear you saying this week that there will be no private wing in the new National Children's Hospital?
Oh, what I said this week is a statement of fact. So there isn't private wings being built. Every child in the National Children's Hospital, whether they're public or private, gets their own room with their own ensuite. So it's really important because it keeps getting misrepresented. Consultants today, under the old deals, not done by me, have a right to practice private practice in the public hospitals. That's what I'm trying to end. So there will,
so
of course, be...
we are building into this new National Children's Hospital facilities for private medicine.
Yes, but they're not...
Against the wishes of the Dáil.
Sorry, Stephen, your current party negotiated this deal that allows the consultants to have their private practice.
But when we've removed
private practice in public hospitals, those rooms will be back as public rooms. They're not special magical rooms, Stephen. We're going to actually take the difficult decisions you're not going to take the difficult
decisions. Simon, what a lot of people struggle with is the idea that you, as the health minister and your party, I don't mean to personalise this, that your party would stand up and say, we are serious about taking private practice out of public hospitals and in the new National Maternity Hospital and the new National Children's Hospital, build in private facilities.
And how would you
a lot of people struggle with that.
If you were minister?
Can I let Louise
This is the issue, and this is where there is a credibility issue. So on the one hand, there's a commitment given to public patients being treated by consultants and by doctors yes. in our hospitals under public contracts. And then on the other, there are facilities being provided for private patients. So we have a commitment for, you know, publicly funded care. Mm. But then we see page 53 of the HSE service plan, a proposal to cut 220 community beds. So this is why when politicians say one thing, OK, when the minister has said one thing or his party has said one thing, and it's not a personal thing, but to say one thing and then to do another, then that is a problem for everybody because people look and they think we cannot take these people seriously, that's where the credibility deficit comes from. And Minister, you criticised me for talking over you and now you're talking over me. So what we need to do is
to actually
make a commitment to public health care to be available for people when they need it based on need and not ability to pay, and then follow through on that, not take actions that undermine it.
We also need to be honest. What are you going to do if you're a minister in a couple of weeks' time when you have allowed consultants to continue who have contracts with private practice? Are you going to have them out in the car parks or are you going to let them use the rooms in out of the rain to see the children? I mean, so actually tell the truth to people here. We're going to remove private practice.
If we're telling the truth, Minister, update on the cost of that children's hospital?
Yes, it's exactly as outlined before. 1.4 billion euro of
1.7.
Sorry, 1.4 billion euro of taxpayers' money.
Plus
1.7 billion in total. The Fred Barry, despite the fact that we consistently see headlines saying the 2 billion euro hospital, Fred Barry, the man in charge of building the hospital, who was the head of our roads infrastructure body, said it's highly improbable that it will reach 2 billion.
And well, we all rule it out. We hope.
And let's talk about the value of this because it's a massive investment in children's healthcare that's years too late.
Okay, we have to take our second break.
Email latedebate@rte.ie. The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And I'm afraid that is all we have time for in this health debate on this, the eighth day of election 2020. I want to thank my panel for joining me and engaging in a respectful debate this evening. Tonight's programme was produced by Regina Henley. Broadcast coordinator was Colm Minogue. Research was by A.B. Philbin Bowman and sound was by Nikki Dempsey. And I'll hand over now to Colm Murray on Late Date.
Thank